obviously quite broad. I broke it down into some key messages that really highlight and tie into the annual budget. So the bullets here talk about the overall county budget, and were pulled kind of in part from the budget brief that we created. So kind of starting with the really big picture about the budget being a strategic approach to prioritizing the county's plan for the next year is that first bullet, and then also talking about how the budget can really be a communications tool for stakeholders and residents to better understand how their property taxes and other fees and financial pieces are utilized by the county. And then as part of your budget brief, we identified six budget priorities. And so I pulled out those six pieces that we highlighted about strong financial health, being committed to a high quality workforce, healthy community, the master plan update that we know will be a big project for all of 2020.
So I guess I would just
safety.
Environmental
stewardship.
So I guess wonder why master plan update is
then
in
I
there.
Then I thought it was important to
hey,
include.
Kristen.
You know what Rock County does. Yeah, go ahead.
No, Tim had a comment. I'm sorry. I don't know if you heard him.
Can you hear me, Kristen?
Yes, now I can.
Okay, good. I was curious how a master plan update fits into the theme of fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, good question. That one is kind of a funky one, but knowing that it is really a strategic and long-term project for next year, and the county has budgeted a fair amount to see that process through. It's tied into the budget. But knowing that the strategic or the master plan in the future could help inform BCC decisions for fund allocation once the master plan is completed, I think that's where it ties into the budget.
So that's kind of a broad assumption there. I'm not sure.
I think that within the budget brief, what was highlighted was the big things that might be of interest to the general public within the budget. And so master plan update was highlighted in there. And so I think that's why it's listed here. I'm almost thinking that I'm picturing these key messages almost as being like the first one is really the big picture of the message. And then the other ones are sort of explaining that further, you know, that the budget is about prioritizing and allocating resources. And then the rest of these are kind of explaining how we have done that for the 2020 budget, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with what's in there. I'm thinking for Doug's purposes, and I'm sure he can figure a fair amount of this out for himself, but having some more specific stories to tell. I mean, I think, you know, that kind of gives you the high level view, but I mean, if I was Doug, I'd be writing something in there about, you know, guess what, when it's time for us to buy a road grader, we actually have already, you know, put the money aside. Some real life examples.
So, you know, and again, that's one of the things here, that the beginning balance and then the ending balance and over expenditures is going to have to be
explained.
The article sure as heck didn't, newspaper didn't explain that at all.
It sounded like, well,
we're just
that's
spending
great.
Our
we're
reserves.
We're just spending it down into the dump.
I know.
I think you need to associate it with the pay-as-you-go system, and actually these are planned expenditures that we're having here. So I'm going to be working on that.
Well, so I think also, Tim, if you think about the mess, I think we can think about that these are the key messages for everything, so including social media, including the article, including anything else you might do, and Doug could, for his article, choose to focus on
every
portion of this, which it sounds like he's going to focus a lot of effort on the pay-as-you-go concept, which makes sense to me.
Yep.
Go ahead, Chad.
Hey, this is Chad. Chris and I'm here, too, by the way. Earlier on in the process of creating the master plan process plan, Dan and I sat down with Kim and we just kind of did this brainstorming of everything that a comprehensive plan could be. But that was before, that might have even been after, that I had that discussion with you guys. I think, Doug, you asked the question, do we want the master plan, do we want the Planning Commission to weigh in on things that aren't land use? And I think you guys all agreed unanimously, know that the Planning Commission was going to stick to land use. So that maybe that's leftover. I mean, I agree with Tom that that's a lot of money we're spending on the master plan next year. But if it's focused on like it is now, just to help, you know, as a guide for the Board and the Planning Commission to make land use decisions, you know, maybe it's not financial decisions.
I think the big piece is that if you're talking about how we chose to allocate the budget for 2020, that is something to highlight in terms of what we're spending money on. I don't know that it goes any further
the master
than that.
Plan,
in this big picture.
Well, I think we can talk about, you know, the projects that we have going on and, you know, how many, you know, miles of road and burying.
So, hey, Kristen, typically during this process while we're talking, as we add things, it's helpful if you can type them in red somewhere, just so that, and when you're done with that, get it back to us so that Doug has a record of some of those ideas. A lot of what we do here is just throw some random ideas to be included in this.
And then Kim usually makes them sound better.
Correct.
Than whatever the heck we
whatever the random,
on the fly.
Yeah, than whatever the random thought was.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do that. I was kind of making notes on a piece of paper, but I'm happy to type so that we can all see it as well.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to probably talk about the reassessment year last year.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
And then probably also talk about the increase in the Tabor credit that's going to end up, that ended up happening because of that as well.
So those would also be, I don't know if those are key messages or if they go in the kind of social media concept, but those would be things we could reiterate in other places too, that this is a reassessment year, and just explain, I don't know if there's a way to briefly explain how the Tabor, Tabor credit works.
And Gallagher.
I'll just quickly come in with some kind of comment that, you know, your appraisal probably increased in value, but, you know, at least the Rock County portion of the taxes didn't go up by that amount.
So one of the key ideas that I would put in there would be alluding to how our budget is constrained by Tabor and by state statute. It's not just up to the Rock County Commissioners to decide how much property tax we can collect. And I think, Doug, also talking about the fact that, unlike many other counties, we have not de-bruced our general fund, right?
We have de-bruced the property taxes.
Have we not de-bruced our property taxes?
Yeah,
which explains why we're constrained in what we can do. The Rock County Commissioners don't have the authority to raise your taxes, right?
Right.
I think that's a good message to get to people.
Well, I think during this discussion, I think I'll probably try to talk about, you know, us funding the CLEF out of our
cash.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rather than going to Alfred Mill Levy or something like that.
Yeah.
Or borrowing money.
Or borrowing money. But as far as the Tabor portion is concerned, I'm just thinking about those social media kinds of posts. If, you know, I think there's some tidbits there. One is that the state of Colorado requires us to have a balanced budget. Is that correct? Am I right about that?
It depends on how you define balanced.
I mean, versus like the way the federal government,
right.
You know, we can't project a deficit, for example.
Correct.
That's something that people might not realize is required in the state of Colorado, and it's one of those just tidbits of information that might, you know, you can put on social media in some way. And then anything that helps to explain Tabor or Gallagher, again, not trying to explain all of it, but, you know, just putting snippets out there about how it works. Those might be things that are help people understand how the government works a little bit better.
And we focus on core services. So I don't know. It's probably never a good idea to talk about what you don't do, but... But, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, for instance, we historically have not done recreation, right? That's not a...
Except provide access roads, too.
Yeah.
I wrote a note that maybe is directly related to that. I would say that in all of these key messages, it would be great to try to draw a straight line from... people paying taxes to providing services. So, like, even within that first key message, you know, we're talking about prioritizing and allocating resources and in some way indicating to provide services to the residents of Routt County. I mean, I think within as many of those key messages as possible, putting an emphasis on services would be good. We're not just collecting taxes just to... collect them, but helping people recognize that it's the direct link to services.
Yeah, I like that. I think it goes beyond just being strategic about spending. It's being intentional about how those tax dollars are being used.
Right. That's the responsibility standpoint, right?
So that's
Do you want to keep walking through these, or do you just want... I had another... We can keep walking through them. Let's do it.
Sure. Next bullet after the... and I'm scrolling up here, but... after the budget priorities here, I do talk about the pay-as-you-go... philosophy that the county has, and I think that's an opportunity, as you mentioned, Doug, to talk about, you know, what the county is looking to purchase in 2020, what will be funded in that pay-as-you-go, you know, reserve fund.
Yep. Well, I'll probably do that when I'm going to start talking about the differences in how much we're spending versus how much we're getting in. So I'll try to
do
that.
I'd be interested to see how you write that up. It feels like a tough thing to explain.
Well, we're just, you know, I guess the big thing is that we've set monies aside, and now's a big year that we have a plate full of things to get done, that we've had monies.
And some years it's the other way, and some years it's this way. I thought that Derek's article, unfortunately, just made it sound like we're spending $7 million
in reserves. Yeah, that we're irresponsible stewards of the money.
Which is shows you how little people pay attention to what we're doing, because if the county, if the city were, if there were no
overspending $7 or $8 million,
you bet your ass would be a big story.
Well, and it isn't sustainable if you look at one picture of it.
Yeah, that's not the way we do it.
Yeah,
and so I think that the idea of that we project that out 30, is it 20 or 30 years in the future that we look at that to make sure that our replacements are fully funded, and that includes equipment, roads, primarily equipment and roads, right? I mean, there's other things that are in there, but... those are the biggest.
You might want to talk about in the future challenges with the decline of the coal mining industry. But I don't know if you want to talk about that or not. But
no, I think that's going to confuse people, because if I go into that, then I have to start talking about clawing back the Tabor credit.
Yeah,
and that, confusing. That might be not quite an opportune thing to tell everybody that that's what we're going to do.
Again, I mean, if we wanted to talk about it, again, from that sort of tidbit standpoint, I mean, definitely we could talk about how four of our top five taxpayers in Round County are directly related to the coal industry, and something about, you know, we're trying to plan for the future or something like that. Just a, you know, kind of a, what's the word? I don't know. A snippet.
Mm-hmm. It does sound like that goes a little bit to where the money comes from.
Yes. I thought that that last bullet point, the original last bullet point, the county's largest source of revenue, the way that's written was a little confusing to me. The part that says the rest is redistributed to other public entities, the rest of what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess we just happen to be the collector for all the rest of the school districts and the rest. So.
But I don't. That's not particularly of interest in terms of what the
government. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, we're talking about direct county revenues and expenses.
I would just cut that second sentence is really all as part of the messaging. I don't think it's terribly relevant. I mean, you could talk about that we also have a sales tax, you know, in terms of, and then we have some pass-through money, but I don't know how interesting that is to people. That the pass-through money is in our budget. The, you know, we have a few, I'm using the wrong terminology, but, you know, we have the PDR and we have the museum. I mean, those things are in our budget, but that's different than the schools and the special districts, that, which are not in our budget. We just collect that money on behalf of those folks.
I agree. I think that's more information than what the average person's really interested in.
Agreed.
Great. So, if I'm hearing you correctly, you would like to keep this a little bit more general?
No, I just think that the idea that we collect money for all these other entities and distribute it to them isn't really relevant to the county's financials. It's just a totally different topic.
Sure. Okay, I think that makes sense. I was looking at it from as a resident, you know, someone says, oh, you know, I pay X number of dollars in taxes. Being able to show how much of that goes to the county versus other local entities.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, because a lot of people don't realize that half of their school tax or property taxes probably goes to their local school district.
It's more than that.
It's even more than half.
I think that you just could reframe that. It's just a different message, maybe. And maybe that's related to, we could wrap it in with the idea of this being a reassessment year and how, how taxes are collected is sort of a different concept than the county's largest source of revenue is property tax.
Yeah, I'm getting back to that part about it might be nice to be able to communicate to our constituents that the county government, the portion of your overall property tax bill that goes directly to support county services like road and bridge and the sheriff is really the smallest part of your property tax bill.
Even if
people do not get that.
No.
They think that their property taxes are coming to us.
Well, some of them think, I mean, in the city, people think their property tax is going to the city too, which is funny because the city gets zero. of their property taxes.
Yeah.
Maybe even just a pie chart of like where your property taxes go and highlighting how much of that is to Route County.
Was that, yeah, does I that pie chart exist in that short thing?
Might be helpful and for the article that you're writing, Doug, is there typically room to put a visual in?
Will
the,
no.
Will the newspaper give
they would.
You think they'd put a visual in there?
Yeah, I do. I bet they'd do it.
Yeah, I think that
so
would be
I don't know. I mean, we have this thing of the revenues
right
here, but this is just the county revenues. I don't know, you know, if they're going to, or whether I can even get what the total collection is that all of the county and how much the $56 million that we get.
So this graph, I actually would think, might be more helpful in line with your article. So we're looking at, in the budget brief, the one that says total revenue that shows where the county's revenues come from. And it breaks it down into property tax and fees and sales tax and federal money and state money. But then for the concept of, you know, this amount of property tax is collected and then this is where it's distributed to, we don't have a graph for that yet, and it would have to be created if we wanted to convey that. But it's a little bit of a different, it's just a different topic.
So on my principal residence, I pay $812 a year in property tax. 156 of it comes to the county.
Yeah.
And you might even be able to, you know, come up with an average or you know.
I bet we could just get the numbers to Slate and they could give us a graph.
Actually, I bet that we've got it on Gary Peterson's
evaluation sheet.
Yeah.
No, the taxes levied. Actually, it's a bill levy sheet.
But then you have to add in the sales tax and all the rest of it. So if we're just talking about, yeah,
property
we want to keep talking about the property tax and keep it vague.
Yeah, well, and I think in relation to the concept of reassessment, you could talk about property tax collection and the different entities that it go to. And you could even, like, did you know that Route County is responsible for collecting and distributing property taxes to these different entities, and here's where they go? Kind of an idea. But I guess really on that bullet, the point is the idea about where our revenue comes from is probably a separate idea than the tax money we distribute to other entities, that those are two different messages.
Actually, here it is. This is the that's the pie chart.
So it looks like our assessor already has a chart that might be what we're looking for.
But that's just property taxes, though.
But that's what we're talking about.
But it doesn't include the other parts.
But the concept that, like, you get your property tax bill and not all of that money goes to Route County is kind of what we're trying to convey.
Right.
So the assessor has something, so you could write a note to ask about that. We can probably track it down somehow.
Sure.
And this is for last year, right?
Yeah, so only 20% of my property tax goes to Route County.
And that includes PDR and that. Yeah,
well, and that's
it does, you're right.
29.8%.
Yeah, but that's actually skewed. It's different because I'm residential. Not only that, I'm residential, which lowers it even more.
But that's the average of where it is. All right.
So I have 600 words. Is that right? And then I have this. Need to have this done by the 6th. Is that what we said?
Yep.
You know what? I don't know word count.
No, it's 600.
It is 600. I think actually they printed on the 6th, so I think you need to have it done with.
Oh, great.
Because they want it a week ahead. Yeah, it's 600 words, and they print it the first Monday of the month, and they request it from us a week ahead. and the commissioners just rotate doing that.
Yeah, okay.
By the way, I had that wrong. That $812 a year that I pay in property tax, that's for those three lousy little lots I have in downtown Yampa mm-hmm. that you can't do anything with anyway.
This is really interesting, Tim. Please tell us more about your property taxes.
So on my house, I pay $1,360 a year. $329 goes to Rout County. The rest goes to other districts. $329 out of $1,360, 24%.
We'll remember that when you want your road plowed. You've already used up your $800, Tim.
I have. I know that.
I think the other big thing, I mean, you probably didn't see the article that was in the Steamboat pilot in relation to our budget, but we were...
I actually did just read it.
Okay.
Kim saw it come through and she forwarded it to me, so I did just read it.
I think it sounds like we agree that the way he conveyed the reserves information was problematic. We'd maybe like to counter that because it makes it just sound like we were overspending significantly.
Yeah.
And so I think we want to try to put out some messaging that helps explain what that actually is. Which I explained it to Derek and so did Dan, but he didn't really like tell the story. He just quoted me and then put the numbers next to my quote.
Uh-huh. So, can you tell me a little bit more about what the plans are for those reserves this year or in 2020?
So, this is the big picture is that the way this works is that, like we were just saying, this pay-as-you-go policy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what causes us it to look like we're spending down reserves. Essentially, when we buy something, like let's say we bought a $10,000 piece of equipment that has a 10-year lifespan, then we put $1,000 a year into a reserve account, which we call a pool, that's for the purpose of the replacement of that, so that when it's time to replace it, we already have the money in the bank. And some years you have a lot of things you need to replace, and so that's like this year, right, where it looks like we're spending $7 million of those reserves, but those reserves were set aside specifically for that purpose. It's not like, oh, we don't have enough money this year, and so we're dipping into our reserves.
Well, you can see it on the graph here. In 2020, that's when it takes a big dive right there.
And so some years we have a lot of roads that need to be repaved or we have a lot of equipment that needs to be replaced. And in those years, you're going to see more spending of those reserve accounts. And then there are some years where there's less spending of those reserve accounts because we don't have as much to replace that year. So, but by describing it as we're spent and with no other information, you know, we're spending $7 million of our more than we're taking in, right, of our reserves, then it just doesn't capture the story about that money was set aside for that purpose.
And that we've been, I like that you said, you know, we've been saving for, you know, a number of years to build up that reserve so that there's that budget available. What are the big projects that will be funded through the reserves? What sort of purchases will be made?
I don't know. I have to look at the list. Do we know what's being replaced this year that's representing such a big spend?
Sure, we know how many miles of road we're overlaying, how many miles of road we're chip sealing.
Yeah, it's just not that interesting, I guess, is part of the point.
Yeah, it's pretty boring. I mean, we're basically $28.3 million worth of stuff. You know, equipment replacements, 10.9, infrastructure replacement, 8.1, and so, you know, those...
You have that. project at the airport that's grant, federal grant funding.
But I think that's separate, right? Because that's a business, that's
and
that, a...
And that would have been in and out both, too, so...
It's not tax supported.
Yeah, it's not tax supported. But we do have, I mean, just that graph, I mean, maybe it's capturing that information a little bit. Because we have $10.9 million in equipment replacements, and those have been planned for, you know, and that those are happening this year, if that's the kind of information you're looking to capture. We do have those kind of numbers.
I was wondering, if it was anything new and shiny and interesting.
Nope.
I think it could go back to the, you know, what is the county spending money on and how does it affect me? I didn't know if it was, you know, a bright, shiny new grader that is going to, you know, improve X miles of roadway in the county. That might be interesting, but if we don't have that information, I think that's okay too.
Well, we have it. It's just not that interesting.
Yeah, it's not. It's hard to... Now, it's on page 23 of the budget thing that you guys worked with Dan and Dan's, but...
But I don't think there's any, like, new exciting thing. The thing to capture might just be the way we plan for and save money for replacements and, you know, and how we maintain our infrastructure is really what it's about. It's a way that we plan to make sure we can maintain the level of service and maintain the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
We put that money aside each year and spend it when it's time to spend it.
Yeah.
So we have that $500,000 that we're going to go into the old communications remodel.
Right.
Building a couple bridges. $962,000 overlays ends up being, you know, $3 million road overlays.
So I think the message is probably about planning. So this is that fiscal responsibility message, right? Planning in order to be able to maintain our infrastructure is really what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And provide those core services.
Well, one of our goals and objectives is to take care of what we have. So
right, and so that's the way we do that. We set aside money in order to ensure it's there to continue maintaining what we have. And you know, I don't think it hurts to continue to emphasize to people that. I would have to look at the exact number, but a large portion of our budget goes to maintaining roads and, you know, our road and bridge services and just helping people understand how important that is and what a big task that is to both plan for it and fund it on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to really engage in planning responsibly and saving money and setting aside money in order to maintain the roads that people need.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The lifespan of all this stuff planning over the next 30 years.
Right. Did you hear Tom?
I didn't say that again, please.
He said planning, looking at what the lifespan is of something like a road and planning for it.
So we need the pools and the planning for that, you know, happens over a lifespan, so, you know, at least a 30-year period.
Well, I have what I needed to have to come up with.
Write your article.
Okay.
What else?
Between that and what's in this budget document that we did that got done.
What else do you have questions about for us?
Yeah. So I just started a brief bulleted list of other social media topics So I think this might be a little bit different process from how an order of how you were working with Ashley. But Kim, Dan, and I chatted about having this conversation that we're having with you now as kind of the first conversation to plan messaging for the month, and that will help me to develop the social media topics that I'll share with the internal communications team. So I'm not sure if you've seen more thought out social media topics at this meeting, but that's why this list is so short. And I guess now I would look for your feedback on other sort of topics that you'd like to see us fill for the rest of January, and if you had anything to expand upon, you know, the very broad, you know, master plan, winter preparedness, or airport topics, I would welcome those.
The last bullet point under the 2020 budget overview says four or five taxpayers. That should say four or five of the top taxpayers.
And I wouldn't necessarily say part of the coal industry. It's they're directly related to the energy industry, because one's the railroad, but so they're not part of the coal industry, but they are directly related to.
There, okay.
And I'd have that message emphasize how we're attempting to plan for the future and changes in the energy industry. And we can pretend like we know what we're doing. Under winter preparedness, I might emphasize safety and in relation to snowplows.
Like being courteous.
Like don't pass them.
And patient.
Patient with them.
I think we ought to talk about, you know, so the personal preparedness too. I mean,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Responsibility, I mean, back to.
I had that in last month's article.
Yeah,
but this
I didn't really emphasize it that much, but it was in there.
But Tim, I think this is related to social media and emphasizing some of these timely messages in addition to the article. But yes, reiterating some of the things Tim talked about in his article, I think would be helpful.
You know, one of the things I kind of had wanted to do when I wrote that article, and I didn't have time to do it, and there wasn't going to be space in it anyway. But I was curious, if you added up all the money that we spend on public safety, if you took the sheriff's budget, the jail budget, communications, emergency operations.
Theoretically, you could put environmental health under that umbrella, too.
Public health. If you took all of those things, I'd be curious to know what percentage of our overall budget is. I think it's a lot.
It's pretty high.
And to the extent that you could consider or a portion of road and bridge is really being about public safety. It's way over half of our budget. It's just basic safety for our citizens.
That's an interesting concept.
Are there other projects or topics that will be coming to the forefront?
So you have
that would be important.
So you have the airport down there, the new website launch, that launched last week. So.
But pushing it out, and trying to get people
fly steamboat.
I did see that email from Tennille.
Yeah.
So it's already launched, so just pushing it out to people and making them aware of it, I guess, is probably the concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys are interested in doing this or not, but the you know, tomorrow we're approving those HRC allocations. I know the city made a big deal of their support for community organizations and how much money they give out to nonprofits in the community, and just giving some information about that. So we have a process by which, called the Human Resource Coalition, that's the HRC, and that's money that goes to support nonprofits in the community. So if we want to talk about that funding and support of community organizations, that could be something to discuss. It probably goes under the budget. I mean, and we've been doing it for a long time, but I just couldn't help but notice the city put out a press release celebrating their commitment to nonprofits in the community.
God bless them.
We are having our community outreach meeting on Tuesday, January 14th in Hayden. That would be something to push out and support.
Yes, I did see that on the calendar. That is a broad overview of county projects, correct? But you will mention the master plan. It's not a master plan specific meeting, correct?
This is community outreach describes what we're trying to do. We want to give some brief updates about what we're working on and then hear from people. And it's helpful if people are there. Obviously.
You probably already have more than enough stuff to put in your article, but having our health insurance be self-funded as an example of careful use of our dollars, that we've saved money in our self-insured plan.
Did you guys get anything out of that presentation at our Western District meeting about the health insurance in Summit County?
Oh, the Peak Alliance?
Yeah.
Only because I have already spent quite a bit of time thinking about it and looking at it. Because at CCAT, that Tamara, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
She gave in a small group an hour and a half presentation with really good questions and answers. So I think I have a higher level of knowledge than most people do.
I think her goal is to get people interested in doing the work and to understand what it is. And
in short,
they've been negotiating directly with the hospital to
who does it.
I can follow up on that because she wants to come and talk to the three of us. I've met with her already, and as you know, the chamber is going forward with it. But she said that if we're going to do it, the county has been an important player in all the places that they're doing it. So she would want to come and talk to us specifically about what our role would be.
Yep. But
that's a side note. Sorry for... We digress.
Oh, no problem. Yeah.
I don't have anything else for social media. Do you guys?
What is social media? Oh, I'm sorry.
Just ideas.
Is that what that Facebook stuff is all about?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Ideas we might want to highlight.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, honestly, where we're at in terms of what needs to be discussed with relation to the master plan. I would ask, Chad to let you know as part of the overall project plan. I just don't know. We're meeting this week, and I don't know exactly where we're at in terms of what needs to be discussed.
So Christy and I have put together messages pretty much through the whole public outreach portion, which is going through February 14th. So, and I'm putting together the PowerPoint for Thursday's meeting, and we'll be joining you all remotely. So I feel pretty comfortable with translating some of those messages to social media.
Awesome. I don't have anything else in mind that needs to be highlighted.
I think Doug's got way more than enough to create 600 words.
Well, I don't think we're talking about Doug's article anymore.
Oh, all right.
So, you know, the master plan concept itself, I mean, hopefully you guys, I mean, that's going to have a lot of topics on it. Anyway,
yeah, so for sure.
Yeah, even included in this conversation.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would say in terms of social media is, like, anytime that we are declaring it whatever month, those are always great things to just, because they feel good. And so if there are any of those in January, I mean, I think making sure that that's on.
No, I'm sorry, you lost me.
You know, whenever we pass resolutions that are declaring it such and such month, I think those are good things to celebrate on social media.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Those are just kind of feel-good things, and it's like, why are we doing it if we're not going to publicize that we've done it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. They're kind of easy, you know, and I think we can find ways to then tie them back to your topic for the month as well.
Yep.
You know, one of the things we talked about last month was we've kind of cycled through these subjects for almost a year now. Especially talking about the commissioner's column, and that at some point we would be transitioning into some more specific looks at the county and maybe people in the county. You know, I can see right here as a social media topic, if there's some way to post a very short interview and picture of Dan Strnad or somebody like that to put a face to our accounting department. And like, you know, last month it would have been kind of nice to have a little part on, you know, emergency operations and
or the sheriff's office.
Yeah, an actual, I mean, you could do that at Facebook. Put people's pictures and everything.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, there you are.
Here I am. Look at me. I think to Tim's point, I think that'd be great if there was kind of a post about just a thank you to our hardworking accounting department. Like, the public doesn't always see what they do, but it's really important to keeping things going, or you know, something along that those lines.
Yeah, there you go.
Or to all the staff in each of the departments, for that matter, to come up with the budget.
Yeah, that's true. Our department heads also, huge. So yeah, maybe a thank you to the staff that does all the hard work to get the budget together every year.
And it doesn't always have to be in alignment with a specific message. How many departments do we have?
11?
21 altogether.
21? Oh, 21. Yeah, I mean, each month, you know, having a social media post about one of our departments with some faces.
19.
But it's probably easier to decide who to highlight when if it's in line with our messaging,
right? Absolutely. Yeah.
If I can make just a broad comment about social media, I don't know if this is a high priority or not, but just whenever we post something from Civic Plus, it has the exact same picture associated with it. And just thinking about the visual nature of social media, I wonder if there's any way we could do that a little bit differently.
What are you talking about?
Well, like, just this picture.
What's
like,
that picture of?
I don't know what it is. And anytime we post a job,
that's the picture?
Yeah, anytime we post our minutes, anytime we post a news story from there, it's using that same picture. So I don't know if the development of just two or three different logos that's like job posting, commissioner's agenda, or, you know, something that kind of is a little more visually appealing.
What is that?
It's something from Civic Plus.
It's like a file or something. It must be a file.
Yeah, it's something related to Civic Plus. I have no idea.
Yeah, we can do better than that.
Yeah, that's
what
I think. Could we come up with something easy?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think that's a challenge with some of those automated systems like Civic Plus, but we can obviously control what that is. So if we create some kind of more generic or general sort of icons that might go with a broad range of topics, it might look better.
Yep. Like I said, I don't know if that's top of the priority list, but yeah. It also might be easy to do and could add just a little more oomph to our social media.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I don't have anything else, you guys.
I don't think I have anything else, but... would like some clarification then on next steps for me. So it sounds like then I clean up this document and send it back out to all of you. When do you usually receive that? Like tomorrow?
So a couple of things. First of all, this is a little bit different than what we've done before, because I think mm-hmm. we're moving the timeline up a little bit. And then I also think mm-hmm. that in the past, we haven't received that document in advance. It's usually been that we get it during this session. So I don't know that there is a usually, and I don't know that we're aware of what usually happens with this document.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, my suggestion would be to forward that document to us right now the way it is before you clean it up, so at least Doug has notes from today's meeting right now instead of having to wait a week or so to get them.
But then I think in terms of the final version of that document, we really don't use that for much. I think it really is Deanna that uses it for the purpose of posting in social media, and then I think we have a communications team that really uses that information for various reasons. So I guess we're not familiar with what that process is, and Kim probably knows, and then Dan has been coordinating that.
Yes, and I know what happens kind of after this meeting, or what the purpose is for the communications team. I was just a little unclear about how you all wanted to use it. So
I think if we just have it, that would be great, and sooner than later.
Yeah, sooner than later would be, when you edit it tonight, that'd be great. Tomorrow.
Even if it's not in its final version, but just reflects what we discussed today, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And then just so you know, I will then work to actually write the full social media post based on all of these notes, and then that's what is shared with the communications team, and they provide their input. Similar to what we're doing, you know, they come to the table with some ideas, they take a look at the actual posts and make suggestions for changes, and then that's what is finally forwarded on to Deanna to do the physical posting and get a photo or image if needed.
I think that sounds good, and I think really all we need is just the opportunity to give input, which we now have done, and then something back to whoever is writing that article that has a summary of what we talked about, which would be what we just discussed, making sure we get that back in this week sometime.
Okay, great.
Yeah, this has been a significant shortfall. Yeah.
Okay, great. Anything else?
And then so when do we start talking about February?
Well, I think you probably need to check in with Kim and with Dan, because when we talked last week, there was some discussion about shifting the timeline to make sure that we're doing it far enough in advance. So we might be able to tell you what's been happening, but I don't know if it's what the plan is for the future.
Okay.
And Dan's just not here today, so.
Yeah, but I know he's out tomorrow, but I do have a call with him that he's confirmed, so I did check it with him there. I just wasn't sure if you all were kind of driving the schedule or if he was, so.
I think we expressed an interest in doing this a little bit earlier, but we we're, yes. Other than that, I don't think we have any real interest in the schedule.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. I think that's it for me.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Have a good day. Whoops. I need to cut her off. You guys can come on up.
Well, tomorrow needs to come up for sure. Maybe
everybody come around.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Well, whatever you guys say.
Yeah, we've got extra chairs. You can drag one
from
tomorrow, over there.
Ben, and I don't know who. You can come sit over here too. Yeah.
Yeah, right over here.
And then if you want any of these folks up here, it's up to you guys.
Do you want any slideshow view or just
slideshow?
Turn on your mics too.
Mine is on.
Mine's been on all along.
Oh, I forgot to turn mine on earlier. You're the best at this, Tim, apparently.
You know, before you get started with tomorrow, I think that Greg owes us an introduction, right?
So I was about to ask everyone to introduce themselves you interrupted me,
but
Tim.
One in particular first.
Okay, sounds good.
With your permission.
Thanks, Tim. I got it. I'm on it. So we're getting an update on the Yimp River Leafy Spurge Project, but we can start with introductions. And Greg, do you want to start per Tim's direction?
This is Tiffany Carlson. She is going to be taking over for me as lead supervisor.
Thanks.
We've been working together on some transition things, and it'd be great to have her on board.
I got to meet you, Tiffany, last week at the Leafy Spurge meeting, so it's great that we have someone to replace Greg, and she comes highly recommended. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And have you been working for the REED program previously or no?
I worked the last season, so the last 6 months I did work for the county.
Great.
Before that, I worked for the Forest Service.
Well, we're glad to have you. Thank you. Does everyone else want to do introductions as well? That'd be great. To insert.
Ben Bell on the working group, the Yimp River Leafy Spurge Project.
Thanks.
Todd Ing with CSU Extension.
Gary Smaller, REED board member.
And Tamara Nolan, I am a volunteer with the Yimp River Leafy Spurge Project, retired ecologist.
Great.
And maybe your prior life?
Before I retired, I worked with the Park Service for 23 years at Dinosaur National Park, and I managed all of their river science and ecology program as well as invasive species.
Well, thank you all for being here, and we appreciate you giving us an update on what's going on with the Leafy Spurge. I have to say, your logo is very cute, but it makes the Leafy Spurge look so nice and happy. I don't know if that's what we're trying to convey.
Well, it is nice and happy, and we are dedicated to changing that. But we also want to make sure people recognize it.
Yeah.
So we wanted it right there in people's face.
Just looks so pretty in that logo.
It's not a bad-looking plant.
And it's not inherently evil. It's just in the wrong place, behaving badly.
Sounds good. So we'll just let you give your overview for us.
That'd okay, great. Thanks for having us, and thank you for supporting us. I have about 15 slides, so that can go 15 minutes, but it can go longer if you have questions, and I'm happy to answer any questions, or maybe others will have better answers. But I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you for the support that the county has offered up for this grant. The total grant is over $100,000 once we add in the $89,000 from the Colorado Water Conservation Board and $15,000 each for Moffat and Routt counties over 2 years, and substantial contributions of in-kind from partners and also in cash from the University of Wyoming. So it's a big project, and wouldn't have come together without the support that we've received from the county. So thank you very much. The short version of my update is that we received our notice to proceed from the Colorado Water Conservation Board just a little over a year ago in November. We're presently on schedule and within budget for all three tasks outlined in the grant. We did receive some pretty directed critique from several roundtable members during the process of the grant application that we weren't adequately addressing engagement from private landowners. So we've really stepped up on that and are doing more of that than what was initially reflected in the grant proposal. We held a stakeholder meeting on April 24th in Craig, and we have another one with updates scheduled for January 7th in Maybell. We recently submitted our second six-month progress report to the Colorado Water Conservation Board, and that was accepted without revision. So we're on track. Our statement of work for the grant includes three discrete task areas. The first was to develop a map of current distribution of leafy spurge and riparian habitats associated with the Yampa River, tributary streams, and irrigation water delivery systems in the Yampa Valley. Most of the ground, on-the-ground mapping is being accomplished by Yampa River Leafy Spurge Project volunteers in the 2019 and 2020 growing seasons. To facilitate this work, we developed georeference databases and maps, contacted landowners for permission to access private land for mapping, and created a tablet-friendly mapping application to facilitate data acquisition. The University of Wyoming will then use the data that we collected in the field to calibrate remote sensing data sets that will inform development of a model, a susceptibility model that will help predict where we might expect future infestations or where the weed is likely to spread in our region. Chloe Matilio is the PhD student at University of Wyoming who's working on this. And so far, the partnership with the University of Wyoming seems to be going really, really well. The second task involves development of prescriptive management practices that are tailored to our specific local riparian environments. The objective there is to identify best practices for reducing seed production, given that water is the vector for spreading infestation both downstream along the river and through irrigation water delivery systems. The methods to be evaluated include prescriptive sheep grazing, both alone and in combination with low-rate herbicide applications. The study will give particular attention to seasonal timings necessary to achieve best results. Graduate student Hannah Kuhns is on board at the University of Wyoming to work on this task. She initiated her field studies on four sites in the summer of 2019 and will return in 2020 to collect a second round of data on those treatment plots. Her treatments involve four different herbicides that are labeled for use in riparian environments, one of which is a new chemistry that isn't yet labeled for spurge but shows some promise and was initially developed for use in rice paddies. So that's always encouraging when there's the possibility of a new chemistry that maybe works better than some of what's been available in the past. And it brings on another partner that we weren't anticipating, the merged Dow Elanco company is now called Corteva, and they're showing some interest in helping us further in the future, especially where community outreach tasks are involved. And the third task doesn't really involve University of Wyoming. It's kind of squarely on all the Younger River Leafy Spruce Project partners. This is biological control and youth engagement, and as we've gone along over the last year, we've realized that a broader look at community involvement is going to be necessary for success of all the different parts and pieces of all of this. So we've focused on youth, but also more broadly in the community. We've got primary responsibility for making sure this task gets done. It's the smallest budgetary piece in the grant, but it's turning out to be the most fun in a lot of ways because it involves kids, and also it's showing some surprising results that are really positive and kind of unexpected. So the CSU Extension in Route and in Moffat Counties has teamed us up with Boys and Girls Clubs and Colorado Master Gardeners. We did a really successful educational event last July. A piece of it in Moffat County and another piece in Route County over a couple different days. And that event went so well that we've started planning a similar one for next summer. So I'll now dive into a little bit more detail of each of those three areas. This year we mapped along the main stem, Yampa River, and some secondary channels. You can see.
It doesn't really show up on the TV.
But the spurge is the bright yellow.
Yeah.
It's that pretty stuff.
So pretty.
Oh, I'm well aware of what it looks like. Don't worry.
In 2019, we were able to get the river mapping done between Hayden and through to the takeout at Duffy Mountain. And this next summer, we plan to map from Duffy Mountain to Cross Mountain Canyon. And if we're really efficient and lucky with flows and weather and volunteer availability and good knee health, maybe we'll get the part between Cross Mountain and Dinosaur done. And the mapping of Dinosaur was completed in 2017. So one of the really surprising things about this effort for us, we weren't sure how we were going to be received by the landowners in the valley. So we made Ben and John Husband made a real effort to contact as many individual landowners as possible, and we received permission to map on 80% of the land base, which is quite a bit more than what we were expecting. We thought people might be skeptical of our motives or who knows what, but to receive that level of permission to go on private land and map leads, we thought was pretty outstanding. So
I haven't seen that picture before. That's pretty scary.
This is us. That was taken from the highway right away.
I'll say that's right down
east of Craig.
Below the highway.
Yeah, that's
13.
Probably, yep.
Nice eye, Doug.
You can see it from MJK.
So if we were skeptical that water is the vector for spurge in our area, hopefully this photo and others like it will convince us otherwise. This is taken from the highway of the Maybell Ditch this past summer, and so it's definitely scary. One of the things that we're learning as we talk to more people is that everybody notices when it looks like what you see there on the left, but many fewer people recognize it when it looks like the one on the right. Early in the season, before it's flowering, it's shorter than the surrounding vegetation, and it's not at all obvious if you don't know what you're looking for. So that's giving us some ideas about what kind of community outreach messaging and timing for field trips and things like that we can be looking at to help people, especially agricultural producers and water users, know what to look for the various times of the year. I don't think it's feasible for us to get mapping done on the tributaries and irrigation systems by the end of 2020, but by the end of the modeling exercise with the University of Wyoming, we'll at least have an idea of whether it matters or not. If we can pick these things up using remote sensing techniques, which is much less expensive, time-consuming, and so forth, maybe we can get away with doing it that way. But if not, we're prepared to try to find a way to keep going in the future and completing the mapping and some of the more important tributaries and irrigation systems in the future. The community meeting that we're planning on January 7th came about because Mike Camlin contacted us and said that he really felt like a lot of people weren't recognizing that they had a leafy spurge problem, and asked if we could help him with that. So it started with wanting to do outreach with the water users on the Maybell Ditch, but it's grown beyond that, and now I think we sent out about 175 invitations, and we're kind of expecting maybe 50 people if we're lucky for that event. The University of Wyoming folks will come down and present, and the Colorado Department of Ag is planning to be there too for questions about insects. Okay. All of the mapping was done by volunteers, including Ben Bell.
Who's the old guy?
My husband did a lot as well, and both guys had knee surgeries afterwards, so I'm not sure.
Well, look at how he's sitting. Come on.
Where was that taken, Ben?
That's in Little Yampa Canyon.
So all of the data that we've collected, that these guys collected, is now on our website, with the exception of anything that we observed on private land where we did not have permission to walk on the private land. None of that information that we just observed as we were floating by, none of that was posted to our website. We wanted to be very respectful of private property rights, and so for public consumption, we have blocked that information from showing up on the website, but we did share it with the University of Wyoming for their use in calibrating their models. So if you go to our website and you click on the map tab, you'll see this map of the valley, and you can pick whichever map you want to look at. For some more detail, so this is map number 23, which is centered on the town of Craig, and I'll just bring your attention to the lower right-hand corner legend. We collected a bunch of data on each polygon that was mapped, and we categorized the density of infestations from trace to high. And so if you want to see more detail in these maps, you can zoom in. So if you look at that nice big red blob there right in the middle, that's the kind of detail you can see if you go to our website, which is plenty of detail for somebody wanting to implement management on their property or otherwise figure out even how to get from here to there to access some of these areas. Oops. This second task is management techniques. So that involves actually putting treatments on the ground in a systematic way. So the University of Wyoming brought their little science sheep herd down and put them temporarily on these research plots with electric fencing. And after their travels, they were a little unsettled for a few days, but they finally settled into eating West Birch, which is what their job was for these some of these treatments. And then some of those that were grazed and others that weren't, this isn't in the Yampa Valley, but this is the way that they apply herbicides on these plots so that they can have a very finely calibrated application rate for the herbicide so they can look at the results from that. But that is Anna. It's not a backpack sprayer. She's holding the herbicide in one hand and she's got the boom in the other, and it's a very finely calibrated system so that they can be absolutely certain what their rate was. It would be practical for normal treatments, but for scientific purposes, it does a better job. Then, task number three is biocontrol. Hannah did her treatments in late May. She did her herbicide applications at the end of July. She collected data on those plots in September, and then she'll be back again next September to collect data again and produce her master's thesis then, a set of recommendations for where to go next. Biocontrol involves several different species, all of which co-evolved with spurge in Eurasia. On the left are flea beetles, and there are five or six different species of flea beetle that have been introduced to manage leafy spurge. They're almost impossible to tell apart, except some are black and some are brown, so we lump them into brown ones and black ones. We don't try to identify them as species. Both of those, the brown and black ones, have been introduced in the past in the Napa Valley. The guy in the lower right is a long-horned beetle that's about 3/4 of an inch long, maybe an inch if you count his antennas. That guy's called Ovaria. These flea beetles are all less than 1/4 inch long. They're really tiny little guys. And then in the upper right, we couldn't find any records of anybody intentionally introducing the leafy spurge hawk moth in the Yampa Valley, but we're finding it all over the place. So it got here somehow. We just don't know how. But I'm happy to have it because it eats spurge. We don't know how much it eats, but anyway, it's kind of fun to find those guys. The first thing we did with this was to go back to the historical records to figure out where and when did anybody put these insects in the Yampa Valley historically, and we were able to identify 42 sites in the Yampa Valley, and we worked with Colorado Department of Ag to develop a protocol to characterize those sites and then collect data in the way of monitoring sites in the future if we could identify any that seemed appropriate for that activity. I got to 21 of the 42 sites. I prioritized the river corridor and got to all of those this last year. It wasn't that pleasant. It was 95 degrees, clouds of mosquitoes, and grass over my head. But I persisted. And found some really interesting stuff. These little green stars are the 13 sites that still have leafy spurge on them.
Beetles.
Leafy spurge and beetles. Every site that still had leafy spurge also had beetles. Which is interesting because when we started this, this is me trying to find bugs on spurge. When we started this, we were told various versions of the story that went like, we tried that, it doesn't work. Biocontrol doesn't work here. The beetles all drown when the river comes up in the spring or they don't make it through the winter. So the first question I asked when I was presented with this information was, well, have we been back to these sites? And the answer was various vague versions of not really. So that was the first thing we did, was go back and have a look. And of the 21 sites that I visited, 13 still had spurge, and all of those still had beetles. Six sites had obviously been heavily sprayed with herbicide, and more than half of those didn't have any kind of vegetation that you would want. The spurge was gone, but what took its place was either bare ground or cheatgrass or some other thing that you wouldn't be too happy to have as a replacement for the spurge. One site was so old it must have had bad coordinates, because I'm sure there was never spurge there to begin with, because it was in the middle of dense woodland, and another site was an island that I was unwilling to swim out to, so I wasn't able to assess that one. But the interesting thing here is the oldest of these sites, which is on the Yampa River State Wildlife Area, the bugs were put there 28 years ago, and they are still there. And in this is kind of a busy table. The site names don't really matter that much, but the older ones are in Ralph County. The more recent ones are in Moffat County. The oldest one is 28 years old. The most recent one is only 2 years old. And of the older ones, I didn't find a density of spurge that was higher than moderate, which is 6 to 25%. I found evidence of insect damage on all the sites. But the older ones, a couple of them, are, of course, when people did this to begin with, they didn't seemed to take very good notes. They didn't take any photographs. So we don't know what they looked like to begin with. But classically, with biological control, you would pick big, dense populations to place insects. And that is not how many of these sites could be described today. So a pattern is emerging in what sites look like that have beetles on them. And I need a bigger set than 13 sites to be sure if this pattern is really a thing. But certainly 13 out of 13 sites that still had spurge showed some of these characteristics of stunted plants that don't flower, where the surrounding vegetation is much more dominant and taller than these spurge plants. So part of what's emerging in my head as a logical next step is to start taking agricultural producers out to look at some of these sites and showing them what we're seeing. I think if I had to try to explain why this story of, oh, it doesn't work, was the predominant notion, my thinking now is that when beetles are active in an area, the kind of damage that I see as an ecologist is not the same kind of damage you see when herbicide damage occurs. So we just need to, I think, calibrate people's eyes to see a different type of damage
in order to assess whether or not these insects are working. So there are some research results from Eastern Oregon in riparian habitats that suggest if you can work at boosting the populations of these insects that in riparian areas in particular by repeated introductions, you can tamp down the spurge populations in those environments. So I think there's way more potential here than we initially thought with this particular strategy. And so I'm pretty excited about it. So is the Colorado Department of Ag. And it sounds like there's a new researcher in Montana who's starting to arrive at the same sort of conclusions. So there's some real potential there. So lastly, we had a blast with the kids out there with the bugs. And so the more of that we can do, the better. I think for sure we'll go back with Boys and Girls Clubs this next year. It may be that Yampatica would have some kids groups. It's kind of bad timing for involving large numbers of kids for a couple of reasons. One is they're not in school anymore, so cooperating with science teachers doesn't really work because the timing is wrong. The other sort of problem we have is that July is mosquito season, and so we had to sort of readjust our plans as we went along because this was a pretty bad mosquito year, and kids can only tolerate a certain amount of that before it starts to seem like torturing children, and so we had to be a little bit careful there with where we went and how much time we spent and that.
We do not support torturing children.
Is that for the record?
On the record, we do not support torturing children.
Exactly. So the young woman in the pink hat and the bat came up to me afterwards, after spending 2 days on this, and she said, "This is the best thing ever."
Great.
So much. That was exactly what we wanted to hear. So this is my last slide. That's our website URL.
There's a donation button on the website, too, if you care to donate. It's very handy.
Yes. The grant and the support from the counties has done a great job helping us with getting technical information together, but the more we realize that these community events are going to be absolutely critical to the long-term success of these efforts to protect our areas, riparian environments, and agricultural productivity from spurge, we need to do a lot more public outreach, and that's not covered very well in this particular grant, and it's one that we've kind of struggled to support, so open to suggestions there. NRCS stepped up to provide some funds to cover our meeting in Maybell, and Moffat County is providing some support. Brough County supported the last one in a big way. The extension provided the dinner, and so in future grant proposals, we'll have a bigger public outreach component because we've realized now that we've gotten into it up to our thighs that there are a lot of landowners along the river, and they all kind of have to be tracked down one at a time because they're not people who sit by their phones. So all of that takes time and work, and we were realizing a little bit more money than we had anticipated. Overall, I think we're doing well, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Explain a little bit where the money's went and what you've used the money for. You're finishing up the second year of the grant with CWCB.
We're starting the second year of the grant right now. And at this point, We have spent on task one about 35% of the money. On task two, a little bit more than that. Task three, which is only about $3,000, we've spent half of that. And we're a little behind because University of Wyoming only bills quarterly. And so right now we've only been billed from by them through the end of September. So we'll be getting another big invoice from them in January. And at that point, we'll probably be over 40% expended on tasks one and two. So we're right on track in terms of budget. Most of the money has gone to the University of Wyoming, and a lot of work is being covered by volunteers for the biocontrol and supported by the Colorado Department of Ag. The in-kind contributions were well above what we said we were going to do. We're over 100% already on some of them, and we're a little bit shy of 50% on the Nature Conservancy and the National Park Service. But the Park Service is doing some other things that aren't tasks identified specifically in the grant, so they're still doing a lot on Spurge, just not quite as involved as the other partners on these upstream areas. But we're doing very well on in-kind contributions. We're going to exceed everything that we said we're going to do there by quite a bit.
Yeah.
So a couple of quick comments. Number one, I think this has, you know, been, I think, almost the most successful and enduring volunteer project I've ever been involved in terms of, Ben, how long ago was it that you kind of started waving the flag?
15.
Yeah, and Ben started assembling meetings that are really well-intended and a regular basis with a good agenda. So it's just really gratifying because normally you see these things and the alarm bell is raised and everybody does a great job of going, oh, my God, we have a problem. But the movement into actually doing something about it is really gratifying. Number two, you know, Tamara and her husband Pete introducing a real level of professional science into the program that I don't think it could possibly have succeeded. And when you go on their website and you look at the mapping, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's a really professional job. And then the last comment I wanted to make was I remember when this got started, and Commissioner Monger, I remember him telling me, you guys are kidding yourselves. You guys have a multi-million-dollar problem out there, and you think $15,000 or $20,000 is going to do anything about it. And actually, I have to admit that I kind of shared it. I thought it might have been a little bit chaotic chasing this thing down. But I'm really, I mean, optimistic. I mean, I know there's a really long way to go, and it's a really huge problem. But at least strategies are getting identified, and progress is being made, and it makes me hopeful. Definitely want to thank all the volunteers. It could not have been possible. And it really is impressive to go to these meetings out at the Carpenter Ranch 3 years in, and there's 20 people sitting in the room that are engaged and involved and working on it. So pretty awesome project. Thank you.
If I may say something.
You may.
You can see how,
talk to her, not me. She's in charge.
You can see how lucky we are to have Tamara on board.
Yeah.
I mean, she's brought a certain expertise. And I'd like to thank the county. I mean, the weed programs in Route and Moffat County, to do anything like this is important. I mean, they have to be involved. I mean, it is a county. It's a county project, basically. We're just kind of like volunteering to help you guys. The other thing, I'd like to thank the Weed Board, too. They've been really, they stepped up to the table. I think it's 20,000 already. They contributed to 10,000 for 2 years running. to treat chemical treatments west of Hayden. And also last year they stepped up and helped us with some outreach for some mailings and stuff. So, hey, it's I think it's working with everybody involved.
It does really help because it makes it easier for someone who's kind of walking the fence between the two counties to say, well, Rock County's still open, bought the dinner last time, and so it's actually...
That's called blackmail.
It's not only gotten money out of Moffitt County, but now NRCS has stepped up, and so it is starting to really build some momentum. And I'll say at the outset, I was willing to be optimistic because I started looking at tamarisk 30 years ago down in the monument thinking, oh, this is emptying the ocean with a thimble. But with persistence, that really turned around down there, and I thought, well, so why can't we do this here? And you only find out by getting off the couch and doing it. So I was not terribly optimistic, but thinking, well, how do we know if we don't try? And the one thing I will say that has me really jazzed right now is that if we've had those beetles out there for 30 years, that means they have probably been keeping this from getting a lot worse than it might otherwise have been. And if we can just bolster those populations, especially in these difficult-to-treat areas along the river, we may very well be able to actually turn it around in less time and less money than what we were imagining.
I've got a small emergency I need to deal with. Thank you very much.
Okay. Don't let it be a big emergency, no, Tim.
And so we're looking forward to working with you.
Thank you for your update.
I guess comment that, you know, that it's intriguing and probably a little exciting to for you to think that the beetles are, or the bugs are doing some good, and you're probably right. I mean, you know, on one hand, the glass half empty, half full. On one hand, you would say, well, hell, if they've had beetles out there, how come they're not, how come they're, the weed's gone? I mean, you'd think, but then it must, as you probably indicate as well, it probably was really, really, really bad when they put them in there. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have gone through the effort. And then probably, just as you say, if they hadn't been eating their daily feed off of these things, it probably would be a lot worse in these places that you just said as well. So
it's starting to seem that way. And the best way to figure it out now is to actually do the thing that didn't get done the first time around, which was this systematic monitoring to help us determine, is it really making a difference or not? But there's the other thing is the research to indicate that you really have to work at increasing those bug populations. But the other thing that I'm seeing too is in several of these sites, I walked into them and I thought, well, geez, there's spurge here, but it's not that bad, and I wouldn't have picked this site to put bugs because there's just not enough spurge to make them.
Or to keep the bugs alive, to feed them.
So part of it may be getting producers out into the field and saying, okay, if what you're seeing here is all this stunted spurge that isn't producing seed because it's not flowering, and then there are these discrete patches of dense spurge that is flowering, could you live with that level of spurge in this part of your operation, which might just be winter pasture? If the answer to that is yes, then we've hit on something that will work for certain producers. But it has to be a conscious, informed decision rather than a just a whatever kind of thought process. And if we can get there, then I think we'll be doing well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to
It's all really fascinating. I have to admit some ignorance on how all this works, but it's helpful to keep learning more about it. I think it probably is. Yeah. All right.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you all so much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I was worried when I came in and I saw this picture of the beach and some water. I was wondering if you guys are planning
we're all going
to
have a retreat.
Yeah,
a retreat.